welcome to the panel session 5 for the Ontology Summit 2010. Today's March 4th, for the sake of the recording. The theme, again, is creating the ontologist of the future. And today, we are basically going to be hearing from the about the results of the 3 surveys we have been holding, and we'll be hearing from the 3 people who are leading each of those survey exercises. Again, just to give yourself a little context, if you look on my slide number 2, it's sort of breaking down into, you know, the requirements for ontologists for the future, content of what's available now and what should be available in the future as far as curriculum, and then discussion of quality issues and certification issues in the future were the 3 aspects. And what we're hearing today then has to do with the requirements and the content and the future. You can see the 3 surveys listed there on the slide. Requirements will be presented by Amanda. The current content was the survey by Arturo Sanchez and Anthony Galton. And then looking into the future was the real-time Delphi study run by Elizabeth Florescu and Peter Yim. We'll hopefully have enough time at the end of this online session to have some discussions about what does it all mean. In particular, what does it mean for our final face-to-face ontology symposium, where we'll be compiling a communique, essentially the position of the ontology community as to our conclusions on both requirements, the needs on curriculum in the future, and a look into the larger picture of the future landscape for ontology. So try and keep those things in mind as you hear the results of the surveys so that we can better inform our communique that we'll be putting together and completing by March 16th at our symposium. So with that, I think I'll hand it over to Amanda. We changed order a little bit. I thought it might be better to have asked for the requirements first and then what's available and what's going to be recommended for the future, and then the longer-term future view. So with that in mind, Amanda, if you'd like to go ahead and take us through your slides, which are also available on the wiki.
Okay. You'll be in, am I coming through clear enough?
Yes. Pretty good, yeah.
Okay. So I have, you see that there are many more slides than I could talk about in this amount of time. And what I've done essentially is included in what you all have there available, at least the raw summary of responses for each of the questions. Sometimes viewed in a couple of different ways. I'm not going to talk to each of them, but they're all there. And then at the end, I've included some results from one sample cross-tab analysis, and plan to generate a few more. I'd like to talk about this one and then talk about what other ones are important to look at. And actually, if there are significant questions as we go, I am logged into SurveyMonkey at the time, so I could even do a live association check if something comes up. So, beginning, basically what I want to talk about is, first, who's responding to the survey?
Tell us what slide number you are.
I'm sorry. I apologize. This is slide 2. I am behind firewall today, so I'm not... I'm not viewing the slides here, so thank you for reminding me. Slide 2 gives the overview and talk a little bit about who's actually responding, so we know how to interpret the perspective from which the answers are being given, what they're saying about what ontologies do, and what they're saying about training requirements, and finally. putting together these three segments and looking for interesting patterns that might correspond to alignments of particular kinds of ontology work and particular kinds of training needs that might help in the development of curricula or training programs. So, slide three. We got quite a variety of people already. I think instead of, you know, this is self-evident, so we'll just look directly at the graphs, I think. So let's move on to slide, slide five, the familiarity with ontology for information science. So you'll see here, of our respondents, the clear majority identify themselves as very familiar with the field, so primarily experienced people answering. Another big chunk of somewhat familiar people, and a much smaller number who are have only a little or not really any experience. There's the one other that shows that person had noted, had just remarked that it depended what the definition of ontology was. So can't do too much with that, but that arguments could be made that they are either very or not at all familiar. So this is good to know. We do at least have reason to believe that the responses we're getting are from people who do have some idea what they're talking about. So let's move on to the next slide, slide six. We're interested to see what sectors people were working in, whether there were any single clusters. Some of us, I think, are very aware of the clusters we work in, and not so much the others. You'll see that our largest group was in education, followed by government, followed by scientific technical. That's none of those particularly surprising, I think. It's interesting to see the, you know, the 3% in manufacturing and so forth. We do have more applied work in fields that are not primarily about information technology or the research end of it. That's good to see. I think it's very exciting. It's also good to know that we're getting some response from this area. We can see what the people working in ontology development in these areas need. Okay. But we also asked what is the primary function of the respondent. Again, I think to help us understand where the people are coming from. People involved technically or at some other level. We see almost 50% are have primary research function. And another 25% in teaching and training. So quite a bit, despite the sector spread, the bulk of primary function is in these areas. Now, it's hard to know quite what to do with the research bit of that, and perhaps we should have broken it out more. I imagine that some people would be unsure if they are primary ontology developers, but for applications, it's not necessarily clear where to place oneself in the options that we gave. So that's a survey weakness we uncovered that makes it a little bit difficult to know whether all of that research slice is purely research or whether it's research and development. Moving on to slide eight, we get a little more help asking whether the response personally works on ontology. And the clear majority of our respondents do in some way. With I'm not surprised, though. This is something that I think is particularly relevant to the training question. They have this 28% indicate that they hope or expect to be filmed. Okay, so those are probably people either studying for or transitioning to work roles that involve oncology. And I'm not surprised to see that, since in my area, many organizations are attempting to convert current staff into oncology staff. I think that's happening broadly, and it speaks to the need to supply ways of training such folks in a useful way. Okay. Moving on to slide 9. Again, this is another question aimed trying to understand where the respondent is coming from, how involved they are, or in what way. We have a pretty strong showing, again, lots of personal involvement. There's a lot, we have a significant chunk of folks, we have 30% of respondents involved in the recruiting or hiring of oncologists. We have almost 29% involved in designing applications that use oncology. So we have a lot of stakeholder representation here. Again, I think that's particularly. So we have not only oncologists responding, but also people who are strongly affected by the quality of oncology students and the availability of trained oncologists. So, a little bit more on the respondents. slide 10. Have we seen recently more evidence of overlap between fields that are not usually strictly considered oncology, or I should say are in different places on the spectrum? They included this question about whether the respondent has worked in one of these main fields, and we find quite a lot of activity there. I'll read off the numbers so you can see them. Some of this is clearly overlap where people are doing various kinds of semantic work at different levels. They're doing both oncology proper and some of this other work. And that's something that we should keep in mind. It's not necessarily the case that this specialization comes to a single point on the semantic spectrum, as it were. Slide 11, we asked if for the folks who answered yes to one of those questions, but answered no to 7, that is, they said that they did not personally develop oncology, but the students work on some other knowledge organization structure, do they consider that oncology work? And for, you know, almost 59%, that didn't apply. But for the folks who did apply, you see that there's the majority are saying yes, there is a self-identification of this work all as being on a continuum of the same type, even if not at the full level of logical sophistication or complexity or semantic precision that we would associate with a full-blown oncology. Again, this is relevant in many ways, including that this is indicative of who is either looking for or being placed in oncology positions. Slide 12 finally asks whether the respondent is considering getting some training soon. Close to half are not. And we've got a pretty broad spread among the others what kind of training they would be looking for. We definitely see some short course need there, very, very large need, and a smaller but distinct appetite for more intensive or longer-term training. And slide 13, we ask if they were interested in training, why? And I found this one particularly interesting. We have 40% of the respondents there saying that they're interested because while they may not be doing ontology now, they think that some or all of the problems they're working on now could be better addressed with ontology. That's something I've seen anecdotally in taxonomy and other other worlds, and I think this is an interesting piece of evidence for that spread, the awareness of ontology spreading out into related fields and generating more potential ontologists in different application areas. Slide 14 gives related background that the respondent may have. I'm going to skip over that one for now, and 15, and head for training content. Slide 16, first training content slide. This one asks whether the respondent is looking for training his or herself, or is looking for training that employees can take. Right. In either case, what are the important components? What's the important content that they wish that to be included there? I have actually broken this into two parts because it is too hard to view on one. You'll see that 16 and 17 are both on this question. 16 includes the top, others group this one, so you know, forget that for a moment, but the above 50% of respondents included these types of content. And that includes some of the ones that I think we would, that traditionally included the theory of principles and logic and so forth. But it also includes, notice, the life cycle, development life cycle, and the overviews of common applications. So we've got a theoretical background more than half the time. People are including that, and they're including the practical development environment familiarity. Very strongly. Slide 17 is the less commonly identified answers, and some of these are ones that folks were asked to specify further, and I did not include that content on the slide, but can pull it up real quickly here. Place here in the survey. Okay. This question 16. The supplement information. In terms of the specific ontology language, which is one of the, yes, the very bottom one there, that's 35%. The most common answers all include OWL. You also see RDF, Common Logic, and then some spot references to other languages, and I will make all of this data available, but by far the dominant, I say this at the very top, is OWL, and the second is Common Logic.
Amanda, just a quick process check. Yes. How long do you think you're going to be speaking? Because we want to keep an eye on the clock.
Yeah. Yep. I'm thinking another 5 minutes. And I'm not going to go through the rest of these details. But just to let people know that I can, you know, answer any questions. I will make all of that, the full information available, and that I can answer spot questions of it if something comes up in the later discussions.
Okay, you still have a while. Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, there's probably no particular need. And I guess there's a couple of views on this. I wanted to say, to jump us over to slide 21, though, noting again that we do have significant participation or response from folks who hire, evaluate, recruit. At slide 21, on 22 gives us, from such folks, the level of background they would expect and a little bit of the type. So it's experience, is it on similar projects, is it in, you know, in teams, what. I'm not going to talk all the way through this, just so you can see that that's a very highly distributed stack of data there. There are expectations everywhere. This, I think, is, again, not surprising, but speaks to the precisely what we're trying to address, and that systems are not consistent, and people are not entirely clear what to look for. And the two slides after that are just additional looks at that same data, or three at least. I'm going to skip us ahead to the very top one. Okay, slide 28. From the noise of the previous question, this has been sent to pull through the top priorities. So we ask people to identify just their top three factors most important in hiring decisions. And, you know, setting aside this, that was not applicable. Interestingly, we get knowledge representation, the logic and formal semantics, and working with subject matter experts are the top three, and it's pretty clear there's a large jump between that and the next. It's interesting, we stepped. All of the academic backgrounds just about are about evenly low on the priority here, or close to evenly, except for the logic per se. It is, I think, one field owns. So, let's see, the next one's another look at that. Similarly, for slide 30, we asked the same question, but looking specifically at the evaluation of oncologists rather than the hiring. Interestingly, this came out a little bit differently. There's some commonality, but and it's similarly distributed. There's a little bit all over the place, people pretty most heavily. And 31, oops, no, 32, right, finally a different take on their experiment. For those respondents who are working in, currently in oncology development and identify some traits that they have and opinions that they wish they had, what would that be? And we got responses very widely distributed, but again with some clear, interesting, I think there's a very interesting result here. I'm not at all surprised to see logic and formal semantics come first. Top of that list, I think many people currently working who become oncologists on the job do not have that background. But it's interesting, it's the second most commonly cited content or skill was on television. I don't think any of us would have expected that or predicted it. And it certainly does not reflect what is prioritized in training in most cases now. So that is all I want to say about the raw responses that you there, and I'll make the deep make sure there's no personally identifying info, but I'll get the free text replies posted and available. After, on slide 37, I just wanted to quickly show everybody what's there and the slides just following it. I did just one cross-tab or cross-analysis for patterns for this presentation. Many, basically with the survey tool, any one question can be cross-analyzed without doing any external, work on the raw data files. The tool itself will do this for any, pick one question and see how it corresponds to answers on all the other questions. And the one question I did that with was, how familiar is the respondent with the field? So from 37 on is a cluster of charts showing how the responses to the other questions correlated to familiarity. And I need to really walk through that, but there are clear areas where in which those with light or no familiarity rank some area very important, and those who are very familiar rank it unimportant, or vice versa. There's not a lot of them, but they are there. So,
can you point out an example of that? I'm trying to see how to interpret that way.
Okay. Let's see. Let me find. So basically, if you're just skimming and you see any bar in one of these charts that is either all orange or has no orange, that's the quick eyeball clue that you've got one of these cases, because that is very familiar. So you'll see, for example, in the slide 38, in evaluating ontology skill, only very familiar people rank ontology reengineering or artificial intelligence or rep development, which interestingly enough, as at all relevant. On the other hand, on slide 39, which actually isn't enlarged, and so it's kind of hard to see there. You may have to blow it up on your own copy there. Testing and evaluation. The somewhat familiars ranked included that, and none of the very familiars did. In the top collection. Sorry, it's primary function. I'm sorry. This isn't important. This is primary function. So we have folks whose primary function is testing and evaluation, who are somewhat familiar. Nobody whose primary function is testing and evaluation very familiar. So we've figured out that for a second. That means we have no dedicated experience ontology testers. Well, roughly. I've got obviously leading to a conclusion, but that's a possible meaning of that. So the color skew, which would give you the quick places to zoom in to where the answers differ between those who are more familiar most of that. Okay? And obviously the same kind of thing can be done for relating different sectors to different skills needed. And that's about it.
Okay, maybe we have a few minutes if anyone has any specific questions right now. Clarification or whatever before we get into a broader discussion. Are there any specific clarification questions like that? I don't see anything on the chat that would need to be clarified immediately. And failing that, then, and certainly thank you, Amanda. We'll ask you to, be available at the end when we get into more broad discussion. But this is tremendous input, because I think now the next interesting thing is see how those needs and priorities stack up against what's being
right.
offered today.
Right.
And
I'd like to make
we will
I'd
go
like
ahead.
A request, actually, Steve, which is that as people, as the conversations are, the other presentations are going on or the further conversations going on, if it occurs to people that there is a cross check they would particularly like to see done,
mm-hmm.
note that in the chat. So I can take that and pass it to make that available. Okay.
In fact, that's exactly what I commented in the chat a couple of times. But,
okay.
Good,
very
good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
Okay.
Okay. In that case, thank you, Amanda. Let's move on now then to hear what Arturo and Anthony have found as far as what's available today. I think it'll be very interesting to see how that stacks up. Are you on? Unmute there, Arturo, star 3.
Hi, Steve. Oh. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
All right. So thank you for giving me the floor. This is Arturo Sanchez. I'm from the University of North Florida. I'm now on slide 1 of my presentation. I want to start with a couple of comments. The first one, I wanted to take the opportunity to thank the members of the community to took the time to respond to the 3 surveys, or at least one of the surveys. We appreciate very much your help. The second is that I have a little bit of a cold today, so I might need to pause for a little while just to sip a little bit of water. So on slide number 1, you can see the title of the presentation. So I'll be talking, I'll be delivering my report. Or our report, I should say, on the ontological curricular content and quality assurance in the present. Slide number 2 mentions the 2 co-champions that worked on this survey, my colleague Anthony Gatton from the University of Mexico and myself, and I have introduced myself already. Slide 3 shows you what we were aiming at. So you have 2 columns. The column on the left mentions the mission and questions of substance for curricular content presently, and the one on the right mentions the mission and questions of substance for quality assurance presently. So the structure of my presentation is going to be a little bit different to that that Amanda just delivered. I'm going to start on... Well, first of all, I'll come back to that in a second, sorry. But slide number 4, just to let you know that I am attaching to the presentation on Appendix A the questions that we use, just in case you want to take a look at that. And I'm letting you know that the data that was used to produce this report is in the window from January 13th to March the 2nd, so it was kind of a couple of days ago. So this is what I say, that the presentation is going to flow in a different order to that Amanda just delivered. So I like to start with our summary and comments without looking at the nitty-gritty details of the different elements, because I kind of felt that I had only 15 minutes. So, and I know that looking at numbers and pie charts and all that could be a little bit tiresome. Then I will go directly to share with you our recommended future actions for the community. And then the last 2 parts, which is the third section with the stats and several appendices that I created by extracting information from the raw data. And that's it's available in the presentation for you for yourself. So I'll mainly concentrate on the first 2 sections, and then depending on the questions, if it is needed, we can revisit specific results, and certainly you can see it on your own. So the first comment that I wanted to mention is that there is a...
Could you read up the slide, slide number? You're on the slide 6.
It's number 6,
right?
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. Going directly to our summary and comments on slide 6, one thing that I wanted to mention as a note aside is that there is a large amount of noise, which is characterized by incomplete and not applicable answers. And I think that this is due to the fact that this particular survey was published earlier than the other two, and I think that there was some sort of an impression from the community that that was the only survey that, that was going to be available. So most of the people actually took the survey, and then, of course, it was not targeted to them. And by the way, for those of you who want to know or want to read the invitation that we sent out to the community, if you go to the chat room, I posted the link as my answer to Megan's question. So because of that, then I think that we got a little bit of noise. If we go to slide number seven, I'm sorry. So here we go with one of our first comments, a summary of end comments. First of all, okay, a few responses correspond to programs devoted to ontology center topics. Only three respondents we found. So I'm talking about, like, say, Master of Science in Ontology. I'm not going to go into which ones are those, but we can get to that if you're interested. The majority of the responses correspond to programs which offer ontology center courses but not programs, so that means that, you know, people are trying to get there. And the remaining of the responses correspond to courses with ontology-related topics but not entirely ontology-centered. So for category two, from top to bottom, I'll be talking about something like, you know, ontology 101 or advanced topics in ontology, which is might not be housed by a program that is, say, you know, PhD in ontologies or ontology engineering. And the last one is how ontological concepts have permeated through established curricula such as engineer of software or something like that. Slide number eight. Most of the programs that we found are degree conferring. Most of the programs are at the master's level. I think that speaks to the way the discipline is evolving. So it's going into a positive a direction of positive growth and maturity, in my opinion. Most of the programs are associated with computing-related departments, which is not surprising, in my opinion. Slide number nine. A total of 34 institutions were captured from 9 different countries. So, I mean, it's not certainly a large sample, but it is a sample that is worth looking into. Slide number 10, we captured quite a few ontology-related courses and their associated URLs, and that's one of the things that I did this morning to extract those, and I put it on an Appendix C, and then there you will find that the names that have, you will find the names of the courses, and if the courses are highlighted, that means that there is a hyperlink for the course. So for some of the courses, URLs were not provided. Slide number 11. It is not clear if the few captured curricula guidelines which target ontology-centered curricula are comparable in terms of maturity to those put forward by the ACM IEEE curricula guidelines for computing, which at this point, in my opinion, it's very well established and it could be used as an exemplar of how to present curricular guidelines within a discipline. My interpretation is that based on the answers that were provided through this survey, is that respondents did not establish this criteria of status, so to speak, of curricular guidelines within a discipline, which validates the fact that again, ontology as a field is growing in a positive direction of maturity. Slide number 12, Appendix D shows bodies that accredit programs, and you find, you know, the classical examples for the U.S. and other institutions that I personally was not familiar with, in the case of UK, Brazil, Italy, even Iran was an entry for Iran there too. On the other hand, the bodies that certified professionals are in Appendix E, a bunch of them there four. In my opinion, it is not clear if these professional certifications have the maturity of say, you know, the IEEE Computer Society certifications for software professionals, and I'm including a link there for those of you who might be interested in that. And again, this again, I think, validates the fact that we're going that direction, but we're not there yet. Okay, so now on slide 13, I'd like to talk about some recommended actions. So the first one talks about development of an ontology-based registry with a web interface that would allow members or any interested person of the community to add information about their educational and training initiatives, which are ontology-centered. So the web interface would provide the community with dynamic answers to a variety of queries and also with access to shared educational and training resources. So in other words, it would give us and I'm going to slide number 14 now, it would give us a dynamic snapshot of kind of the status of the discipline, if you will. But also would allow for people around the globe to actually share resources, which is some of the things that was mentioned by some of the respondents in their last final remarks. One of the things that I personally think, and I am in conversation with Anton Galton, and of course we welcome input from the community in that respect, is to try to assemble a team of students from different universities, grad students, that could use this as a cooperative or collaborative software development project across continental boundaries that can be tackled in the context of capstone led courses. And we can even explore the possibility of funding for that. Slide number 15. One recommendation is kind of obvious, is to use the capture course information to compare with and contrast against curricular recommendations this community will put forward. They're there. You can click on them. Unfortunately, some of them only contain just the course description. So I don't think that the majority of them contain an actual link to this syllabus or syllabi. But maybe it's one small point of contrast when analyzing whatever curricular examples are going to be put forward by members of the organizing committee of this summit and also the community at large. On slide 16, seeing the majority of capture programs come from computing. The community might want to consider some sort of lobbying activity to promote the infusion of more ontology-related content into computer curricular models. I mean, these models are refined and reviewed regularly, so it will be worth the effort of community members to be part of these discussions and start suggesting the inclusion at a more prominent level of ontology-related concept. For instance, this would align perfectly with some initiatives that are being packaged in the way of computational thinking, mainly coming from Jeanette Wing, who was originally at Carnegie Mellon and now at the National Science Foundation. And there are even programs now that are being funded to explore the idea of infusing computational thinking across curriculum in different campuses. Anyways, we can talk about more about that if people are interested. Slide number 17. seems to me existing professional certification bodies, the community might want to consider offering feedback to them or at least cooperating with them about the certification processes. This is the last slide, and honestly, I'd like to stop here unless people are dying to see. If you go to slides 18 and on are just pie charts and tables and things like that. And I mean, what I just presented is just a summary of all of that. So I'd like to pause here and then see if there are any questions or ask for the advice of our chairperson to determine where to go from here.
Okay. Well, thanks, Arturo. Actually, if anyone wants to ask a question, just press the little hand icon lower right of the chat room, and I will call upon you. We can unmute your phone. I guess my one reaction is I am kind of curious what kinds of courses, as far as digging into it a little bit, did you see predominating? Was it primarily courses in logic or courses in information modeling?
Let me just see if I can find the list here. I'll direct you to. So if you go to slide number 44, you can see by the names, there is a wide variety of courses. I mean, all the way from, if you will, mundane things like Engineering or Software 2, which is my course, to, metaphysics. And there were some of them that had very intriguing names. Let's see if I can find one of those. Well, there's description logics, of course, which is not a surprise. The modern biomedical systems, model logic. But there was one with a very very interesting title that really intrigued me. I cannot find it right now, but I don't know if that answers your question. I mean, the ones that are highlighted, they have a hyperlink associated with them, and the ones that are not don't have any of those.
Yeah, no, that's a fascinating two pages there. I think it gives us a good base of knowing where you can learn these kinds of things. To hover over it to find out which institution is offering each one, which is fine. Amanda just dropped us a big comment. Take a while to read.
Yeah, she's just following up on
the yeah, okay.
question that Megan posed.
Okay, well, does anyone else have any question they want to ask Arturo at this point before we get into the bigger discussion at the end? And please raise your hand if you do. Failing that, I think I'm going to move us on to the third presentation today, which is now looking out into the landscape of the future. And for that, and by the way, if you want to get something in, you can always write it in the chat. But why don't we move on then to have both Elizabeth and Peter present the results of the real-time Delphi study and see how that informs us.
Okay, Peter Yim here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Peter. I can't hear Elizabeth.
All right.
I can probably see you.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
I hear you, yes.
Nice and clear.
Great. Okay, why don't you take us through, both of you?
Yes. All right, I will start, and then when we get to the real-time Delphi results, I will pass it on to Elizabeth. So I'm on slide one now. This is the synthesis on community input and the real-time Delphi study results presented by Elizabeth Florescu of the Millennium Project and Peter Yim of Ontolog. I'm moving on to slide number two, and our mission is to develop an outlook on the future landscape of the field of ontology and the possibilities for education and training of ontologists. Of course, we start from a blank slate and took it through the, I guess, 4 or 5 step process that is listed below. On December 17th last year, there was one session whereby all the survey champions had a session like today's. But that time we were beginning, and the session was labeled Surveying the Landscape and the Possibilities, during which time we had an extremely interactive session. I have links on this slide, and if you click through them, it will actually bring you to that particular event, during which we interactively got everyone involved during the session to help us come up with relevant developments. And then after that, we synthesized all the input collected, and we toss that into the real-time Delphi questionnaire. So the real-time Delphi study revolves around 16 developments that were identified during that session. And the two links following this bullet, which is the third bullet, that includes a summary of the collected results and then the full annotated verbal reasoning behind some of the results. Of course, an analysis and some synthesis of it is what Elizabeth and I are going to present. And we did a second synthesis based on the real-time Delphi results, and we're going to share some of the key results, key findings, and some observations. And of course, let's take it that this is just the beginning of the second synthesis. We'll be doing more discussions later. We can do the discussions online on the mailing list and definitely over the symposium as well. So moving on to slide number 3, let's go back to basics. What were we trying to find out? So early in the game, we actually established for each of the track champions some of the pertinent questions that needs to be asked. And essentially, these are the 5. What are major developments that we foresee happening in this domain? What are the important trends that are beginning to emerge? How many ontologists will the world need? When do you think we will start having ontology departments? And lastly, what needs to happen between now and then? We may answer some of these questions, we may not, but that's the ongoing conversation. But all these questions are pertinent. And at this point, I will pass the floor over to Elizabeth, who will take us through the real-time Delphi study and share with us some of the findings. Elizabeth.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Well, slide 4. I just want to remind those who were in the session before and to those who didn't meet before, what we mean by development. That in the case of real-time Delphi is an event, something that has a significant impact on the future of the field that that we are studying. And these developments were boosted from many, many thoughts that were vehiculated before we started the real-time Delphi. Peter mentioned that already. And the intention is to distill not more than 20, 25 developments for one study, because then it begins to lose interest by the end, the responder. We didn't have a predetermined number, but the final came out to be 60. That would answer to the questions that Peter just mentioned. We didn't have a very large panel because in this case it was very, very specific. We were looking to an expert panel. We were looking to expert you. The total number of participants were 35.
Oh, we're on slide 5 now.
We're slide 5, thank you. And you can see the demographics of the participants. As of employment distribution, it was pretty balanced. However, as regional distribution, most were from North America, and for given the very disproportionate regional demographics of the participants, a regional analysis on the trend of opinion wouldn't be appropriate. So we did not do that. Although usually, that's why we ask people reason to compare, but in this case, it wouldn't have been appropriate. But as I said, it's very well balanced at employment point of view, which gives even more importance to the consensus side of the answer. Next slide, slide 6. What did we look at? Which are the developments that will happen and in what time frame? When will they happen? Are they already happening? If yes, we ask people to give examples, explain. Will it happen in 2 years, 2 to 5 years, 5 to 10 years, 2020, beyond 20, or never? And for each development, we ask people to specifically mention for the time frame that they gave, what would be those factors that would encourage, and to put them in order, 1, 2, 3, the most important and such, being the first, that would encourage that development to happen. And if not, what are the barriers? And eventually comment on how can we overcome those barriers. And the response is slide 70. The collective input is interesting. So we color-coded the consensus. So there where it was more than 40% consensus, and that's a lot. That it was a 35 people panel, expert panel, when you have more than 10 answers, that in for only one bracket, time bracket, that's a pretty high consensus. So we see that for some development, for some time bracket, there is high consensus. For some, we don't even, there were no answers. No answer means we don't know, or it just doesn't happen in the time frame. More interesting than this, analyzing just the consensus, is slide 8, please. Next slide. Is rating the timing, when the development will happen. And on slide 8 now, I don't expect you to read all that, but if you go online, you will find the following. The idea is that question number 14, that refers to ontology as an evidence of the benefit of ontology that came out on top. And most of the questions of the development that came out on top are related to practical applicability and real evidence of the importance of ontology as an emerging field. And if we combine the rating of time. Here, higher the rate, lower or shorter the time that the development would happen. So when you see 7.6, that means that it will happen before 5 years, earlier than in 5 years. Now, if we combine the rating time with consensus, then it gets slide 9. And this offers a very interesting analysis of futurist or point of view that I am, or real-time desktop developer. For an expert group to have this nice color shape from top to bottom, from left to right, combining consensus and the time frame, it means that it's a strong indication that that very development is really happening and is very important. And this this kind of table can be used both by professionals and policymakers, because it shows where are the gaps. If there is no consensus somewhere, or it's so that it will never happen, then we ask, why is that? Mostly when it's consensus that it will not happen. Why it will not happen? Is it important that it happens? It is important that something has to be done at policy-making level. And one interesting observation is that although the participants were from all sectors, there was high consensus that ontology will not make its way into ontology engineering or university department very soon. Most people said never. And there were high comments on that, very important comments that for you being the expert, probably you can make more sense of them than I can, but with my point of view, it was interesting as a motivation. There might not be enough material to justify a department itself. However, there was also high consensus that ontology will be needed to be taught as a cross-disciplinary program. And that corroborates the fact that about 5% of professionals in informatics software will have to have ontology training. That means that in universities, some of you are already teaching ontology, but it means that it will be needed more and more. And that gets us to slide 10, where I will highlight just a few of my personal observations, and then I will turn it over to Peter as much more insight in it. I was just looking more at the quantitative analysis of the data, and just a few observations as I went through the comments. Anyhow, there is a general consensus that a lot of these things will be happening soon, let's say by 10 years. However, considering that it is a panel of experts, this might be taken, the time frame might be taken with a little bit of cautiousness. The ontology will likely show up as a cross-disciplinary program, as I mentioned, rather than being a department by itself at universities. However, it will be very needed in training. And it was interesting that the development itself is said that 5% of information systems and software engineering professionals in 5-10 years will have to have ontology education. That means that they have to introduce ontology in somehow in universities for software engineers should be taken up soon. Now I would turn it on to Peter. I was very happy to be part and to have the opportunity to conduct this study, and we will try to put some of the outcomes in the next part of the future report. Since it is an emerging field, extremely important, and policymakers should learn more about it, and the need that has to be put out there in order to encourage the development of the field at the path that is needed. Peter?
Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth. I mean, it was a phenomenal exercise. I learned a lot, and of course, some of the tools that your project has developed really helped. And I mean, I'll take, I guess, build upon this last bullet from Elizabeth, because I sort of, we agreed between Elizabeth and myself that she will do an outside-in perspective, take an outside-in perspective, and I will take an inside-out perspective from the data that is collected. So from this third bullet, which means, I mean, we have a general consensus that a huge number of people needs to be trained or educated in ontology, and the fact that we actually don't even have the programs or curricula in place, that sort of rings a bell and should sort of give us some sense of urgency as a community that we should quickly get our act together. So moving on to the next slide, slide number 11, these are more findings that we gather from the data collected. Okay, first of all, on this slide, a fair number believe that we already or will soon have good evidence on the benefits of ontological of the ontological approach, as exemplified by compelling ontology-driven applications, available ontology repositories, better understanding from the industry and academia, and adoption by international standards. If we went back to the sort of colored visual that Elizabeth was showing, you can actually see the solid colors, I mean red and even some orange in front of them, indicating that some are already here, a lot is happening within 2 to 5 years, and most definitely we will sort of be going sort of up the curve in 5 to 10 years. So this is very encouraging. But one of the points that we collected showed that R&D funding, of course, I mean, we all know R&D funding is a leading indicator of growth in a technology field like this one. There actually was no consensus on the availability of R&D funding, and it appears that it might trail the time frame of other developments, which means if we had major growth in a field, let's say in 5 or 10 years, we probably should have a lot of R&D funding maybe 5 or 10 years ago, so that at least the R&D goes before the take off by maybe 10 years. I mean, we in the future study, we all know that it takes like 10 to 25 years for major disruptive technologies and paradigm shifts to happen. So this is a definite warning that something is lagging. Also, if we went back to that slide, we also see that the availability of tools sort of lagged the anticipated growth as well. So this funding number one, this being number two, are the two major observations that I guess the community needs to address. Going on to slide number 12, there are strong urges, I mean, both from the numbers and from the anecdotal responses, there's a strong urge toward clearly defining the discipline, the ontology discipline, so that the field can settle in. So it's almost dominant, I mean, in the responses that even the ontology experts agree that they are sort of not agreeing with one another. So, I mean, even practitioners are sometimes confused by what really is the ontology discipline. Is it a science? Is it an engineering? And so on. I mean, what is involved? But obviously, Amanda's survey sort of threw a lot of light into that. This second thing, which I guess our content track actually is addressing, and that's the main theme of this summit, is that, I mean, we need to develop the required body of knowledge and the curricula so that we can provide reference for educators and trainers. Because these two things are almost non-existent, and people are sort of on their own, unlike, let's say, the ACM IEEE example that Arturo was showing, that the computing science or computer science or computing discipline has adopted. There's very little like that in ontology. The third strong urge is toward developing compelling applications so that the people outside the field can appreciate the value of the ontological approach. I mean, I guess those who were with us last week at the Ontolog Forum session actually got a good feeling after the session. I, for one, I mean, definitely was very excited to see one very compelling application that made use of a lot of the tricks and approaches ontological engineering, in artificial intelligence, in leveraging assets on the web and so on semantic web technologies and so on. I mean, that was wonderful. We need more of those. In one of the earlier session, there were a lot of exchange on if we were to convince the outside, or at least try to explain to the outside world what ontology is, what can we tell them? Sadly enough, I mean, the Alti-Delphi also told us something, which I will go through in the next slide. And of course, as I said earlier, developing the tools that will allow ontologies to be applied by more users and not just the experts is important and very, very urgent. So these four are the urgent things that need to be addressed as a community. Last slide on the key findings, it's that it's also generally believed that the discipline of ontology would not likely be understood by the masses. So this is the sort of one consensus that came by. I mean, actually, these are also consensus that will never, almost never, get the rest of the world or the everyday people to understand ontology or appreciate ontology like they understand or appreciate mathematics or physics or psychology or music or art. This just simply, I mean, even among ontologists, I mean, this isn't quite likely going to happen. And while ontology education might move into secondary or high school education, it is highly unlikely that it will show up in primary and elementary school education. Not that it's good or bad, but one comment says that it is just not age appropriate, which I guess is fair. We have collected the sort of, I have put online the full collected input dump, I mean, with all the anecdotal remarks, which I think the whole thing is dozens of pages. And go take a look, make your own assessments, and these things would help if you're a decision maker, I mean, whether your decision is setting up policy or setting up your courses, I think these inputs are well worth reading through. So going on to slide number 14, I have a few, I mean, since we are, I guess, doing a future study, probably for the first time within this community, so I have a few sort of postscript, I mean, remarks that I would like to share. I have been involved with the futurist community for a long time, so I mean, I think these things are interesting. Assuming some of the group here is only exposed to future study for the first time or maybe the first few times. So first of all, it's recognized among futurists that no one can predict the future. So don't say that we are trying to predict anything, but we are just doing this so that we can present a collective vision to share among all of us and possibly to provide some decision support information. But a couple of comments, I mean, that is well known among the futurists is that William Gibson made novelist, I mean, made this remark that the future is already here, it's just unevenly distributed. If anyone represents the future, actually this group represents a future where ontologies are prevalent. So we are the future here, and of course, the future is unevenly distributed. I mean, even if you take any technology, any paradigm, I mean, some people go before others, and we are just that group. But then Alan Kay, I mean, credited with object-oriented programming, I mean, says that, well, of course, it's some variation of it, of this statement has been made by others, including like Abraham Lincoln, is that the best way to predict the future is to create it. So we are actually here to try to create the future for our own community. So in futurist lingo, we are actually being normative futurists here ourselves. Going on to slide 15, and sort of my second to last slide, given that the respondents are supposedly experts in ontology, and we are actually just preaching to the choir, maybe not preaching, but sharing among the choir, we should note a couple of things, I mean, which I guess is sort of common knowledge among futurists, is that those who are deeply involved have a tendency to be over-optimistic about how soon things might happen. But then the same group also have a tendency to underestimate the strategic impact. I think some of that would also apply to us. So 5 to 10 years, is it really true? Or maybe is it more close to 5 or more close to 10 years? If you ask me from experience, I would say maybe more close to the 10 years because we are the choir, and we tend to be over-optimistic about how soon things will happen. But then we also underestimate the impact that we might create to the rest of the world. So don't give up. I mean, I think the results bear very well on telling us that we are on the right track. I mean, doing this for this ontology summit. So moving on to slide 16. I want to, again, I mean, on behalf of Elizabeth and myself, express a huge thank you to each and everyone who has contributed to this study. And so that's all I have. Back to Steve.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. So we now have a little time, not a whole lot of time. We've already, an hour and 40 minutes into this call, to sort of have people both orally on the phone as well as on the chat room itself, raise issues, reactions, comments. I will say my own thought is that I think it's now we have some material to dig into to go back and look at what we are going to be saying in the communique and what we're going to be saying in terms of recommended content and curriculum. We have some great input on the sort of the requirements and needs side, both expressed from industrial and academic perspectives. We want to make sure those are well represented in our recommendations. So if anyone has anything they'd like to say, please just put your little hand button on the chat room so that your name will pop up on a queue. Any thoughts or comments? By the way, the chat I just put down there was that Peter, you had mentioned appreciation on the part of people, and I think the question, as I recall, was do we expect mass understanding? I think people will presumably appreciate ontology without understanding the field of ontology, and in that sense, maybe it's not all that different from other specialized fields, quantum computing or nuclear power, for that matter. I don't know. Where people don't really understand, perhaps, how nuclear power is generated, but they appreciate it or not, as the case may be. So that's the comment I was making there. So we have one of the anonymous people, or the one anonymous participant, who I don't know who it is, asking a question. So if whoever that is will press star 3 on their phone, I will. We will hear you.
This is Megan. My browser is kind of acting funny, so I'm the anonymous user. My question / comment is that I'm coming from the government sector, but I'm curious if it's the past year or two because of the economy if that has had any impact on the adoption or sort of getting into the semantic field, because I think some companies may feel there's a risk in adopting or pursuing semantic technologies or ontologies because of the economy. Could you speak to that?
Well, this is Steve. I guess my initial reaction is that since this is still pretty out there on the leading edge, that I'm not sure if it's seriously affecting the adoption issue, because I think it's not really, the technology isn't out there in shrink wrap form for people to consider adopting either institutionally or individually at this point. And my take is I don't think that's really affected the adoption side. It might have affected some of the R&D investments. But that's just my personal opinion. Does anyone else have a thought on that? And hit the old hand button if you like. I think we are seeing, at meetings like the Semantic Technologies Conference that's going to be coming up soon, there are a lot of companies who are coming out of the woodwork with semantic technologies. So I don't think that's still coming. I think if Peter's right, though, it's going to be a long curve before it really hits mainstream. Well, let's see. Jeremy Arcall has his hand up.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So just to speak to Megan's comment and question, I was at the Semantic Web Conference, the technology conference last year, and I went to the same conference the previous year, and it turns out that a lot more people from the Europe sector were presenting more applications and more use cases and that sort of thing. So I would assume that the economy did affect a lot of companies here, but you still see a lot of sort of silent on semantic web efforts in companies here. So, yeah.
Well, interesting. Yeah. Of course, Europe got hit with economic pressure as well.
Yeah.
Although it is true, the European Union has been a big funder. The ICT programs there compared to this country.
Yeah, definitely. Like with the I remember someone from DISA speaking, and they mentioned that they sort of got their funding cut for a lot of the stuff here, so it's unfortunate.
Yeah, in contrast with Framework 6 and Framework 7 in Europe, which is actually quite large.
Yeah.
Okay, Amanda, you have a comment. Don't forget to unmute.
I do. I think that it might be the case that big economic factors are affecting supply more than demand in this case. And the reason I say that is because, as was mentioned, in the U.S., there's not, there hasn't been academic or government-funded stable sources of funding on the same scale as Europe. There are many, many startups attempting to get going, but there are many customers looking for proven things, and they are actually, in some cases, motivated in part by economic consideration. Specifically, not in the semantic web that's conventionally understood area, but in the semantic services and data interoperability area, a lot of people have unbearable fixed costs and are beginning to get to the semantic technologies as a way of reducing those costs. They can't put forward, in many cases, they can't go experimental. They need something proven. And there's a gap, a communication gap and a development gap, where there are many, many candidates out there for approaches to addressing data interoperability using semantic technologies in one way or another. But those companies are struggling because they're not at the proven stage enough for those customers, or because of unrelated issues having to do with the way government contracting happens in particular. Those who have the need and those who have the solution have never in the same conversation. So
you're saying you think the economy did, in fact, hurt in that regard?
Well, I think it may. I think I certainly see a lot of the smaller companies are struggling right now, even though I also see enormous demand for it. This is one of the reasons I was so excited to do this this survey and this track, is because I see being in the position of watching both of these things happen. The unemployed or underemployed oncologists or genetic technology people coexisting with the, especially government organizations, starving for trained oncologists and hiring any of them off the street to claim to use one, which is good for the rest of us, and holds up the progress, actually. But I think the economy has hurt those small companies even more and kept them from being able to put themselves forward. And the long-established players are clearly hurting financially right now. But the demand is still there. So
okay. Thank you. Peter, you have your hand up.
Yes. I was trying to sort of address the same question on whether government government investment into this was affected by the economy. I would tend to believe that it's more a matter of the technology, or at least this ontological approach was not properly lobbied or not properly understood. More so, I think that affected the situation more so than the economy. If we look at, let's say, compare the U.S. Versus Europe investment into the technology, you could see that the U.S. actually was in the lead all along, particularly when let's say the Doppler demo program was going on strong, but that stopped in 2005, way before the current economic woes have started to happen.
Okay. All right. Yes. Arturo, do you have a comment? And don't forget to unmute yourself.
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention that one of the things that will stand out on the ontology community would be by demonstrating the usability and the power of the concepts behind it to solve real life problems. Currently, the United States is going through an important transformation in terms of healthcare, and the federal government is injecting a huge amount of money in the pursuit of creating electronic health records and establish interoperability, global interoperability of electronic health records. So this is a very good opportunity for the community. So I was just wondering, if anybody in the call right now have any indication of whether some of that money is coming to the community in terms of proposals that have been sent through to respond to ARA instance, etc. I know that we have submitted a couple of them, but we haven't gotten any. And the way that the federal government is implementing this is that, you know, the call for proposals are coming really quickly, and the turnaround times are really, really short as well. I was wondering if we're getting some of this money to be able to demonstrate, you know, how ontologies can be used to solve interoperability problems in the healthcare sector. Thank you.
That's a very interesting question, because my take is the people who are able to land the ARA funding are companies with teams of proposal writing, professionals who can put together these very compelling sounding things. And that's not necessarily the same group as the academic community, who have really been getting some of the ARA funding, but not necessarily the big ones, the big multi-million dollar ones. But that's just sort of my observation. Robbie, do you have a comment?
So, can I address that question a little bit?
Peter here.
Yes, Robbie
okay.
here.
Robbie, hold on.
I just printed my question on the chat board, but addressed to everybody, but especially to Amanda. Is it possible to extract some data, however less accurate it might be, about the likelihood of decision makers who give grants, funds, and awards on their awareness of ontology benefits or benefits of using ontology in their work, especially federal and other R&D bodies like NSF, NASA, etc.?
So your question really is whether or not it's possible to filter from the existing answers, or are you suggesting an
yes.
additional survey?
No, I'm saying both. If it's not possible to filter easily because we never targeted that as a separation criteria in our questionnaire, then we at least maybe we contemplate another questionnaire for that community.
Of course, we'd have to motivate them to want to participate on that. But
we can try. It would be a better sample than the sample of practicing ontologists, which was the primary sample in the current survey.
Yeah, I see the biggest obstacle there is to how we would get the decision makers, the policy makers, why would they want to take the time to answer such a survey. But
I would target our request through powerful CIOs and things like that, and maybe we get one or two stakeholders to buy into that, and then we the community that way, or something of that sort.
Possibly. Okay. And let's see, Peter, why don't you get to there if you wanted to comment on the other thing, just so we can keep some order here, because Amanda had her hand up again.
So you want me to...
Did you to answer my question.
I guess. I'm trying to keep it, I'm trying to use the queue to keep the sequence of speakers. So if you hop back in the queue, Peter,
okay,
you
all right.
Address the issue of funding. And while Amanda, did you have a response or a question?
I just wanted to quickly say, I don't want to directly respond to Robbie's question, but I wanted to suggest that this might be a good point to mention our thoughts about continuing about developing some means of continuing even after the summit to gather information and maintain the picture like the sorts of snapshots that we've gotten now.
On an ongoing basis, you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you don't want to throw that into this session, but it's something that we had talked about offline from discussions, but we might put value in doing that through one mechanism or another. But it would be developed.
Well, why don't you throw that in the chat just so it gets documented.
Okay.
That's a good point. Okay. Well, let's see. I am aware that the clock is telling us here we've been on for 2 hours, and so I don't want to abuse anyone's time. And I think we've gotten a lot of input here. I know I'm going to want to go back and take another look at some of this survey results now. So in that sense, I think this has been really useful to take its input. I'm hoping some of those people who are involved in preparing content, I noticed Michael Gunniger has slipped off the chat room, but I'm hoping he's going to be able to keep an eye on this, as well as Fabian and Barry Smith, when preparing the communique and the content recommendations, because this is a great body of knowledge that informs all of that. So unless anyone has any other comments, questions they want to put on the chat board or raise their hand, I would suggest we try and draw this to a close at the two-hour mark. Any parting comments on anyone? These people typing away according to the chat room icon. Good, okay. People just giving last-minute input. All right, well then, I won't waste anyone else's time. And I say we had a good one. And please, for those of you who have not registered, please register for the face-to-face. If you're going to be there, registration closes on the 9th, which is only 5 days away. So... don't forget that, because it'll be very hard to compensate if you haven't registered ahead of time. Peter, you had a last remark?
Yes. You remind me to remind everyone that while we need to register for the on-site attendance, particularly because NIST is a federal government facility and you really need to be pre-registered to get there, we are also looking to people to register themselves for remote participation. So if you are participating and you're not going to be there, be on the phone with us. While there's no deadline, we definitely want to know how many people are going to be there so that we prepare enough resources to support the outside, the remote participation. So,
hello.
Yes.
Pavitra, I have a quick question.
Okay.
Now, you had sent out a list of our sponsors. Do you have to be a sponsor to participate? And for sponsorship, is there any? Does it cost money?
By no means do you have to be a sponsor to participate. And the physical meeting is free, so there is no cost on that. Furthermore, as a sponsor, there is no cost to being a sponsor. It really, at least no required cost. It implies sort of support of the overall effort, endorsement of what we're doing. We are certainly open to the idea of anyone who wants to step forward to help underwrite, say, a coffee break or an afternoon sodas or something. We can put you all in touch with the NIST cafeteria people who can arrange for catering in that regard. but it's not required. No, you can simply express your interest to be a sponsor. I suggest you could do that by email if you'd like to be listed. Send an email to either Peter Yim or myself, and we'll make sure you get listed on the page.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, then, let's adjourn this meeting, and again, hopefully see many of you at the symposium on March 15th in Gaithersburg, Maryland. But if you can't physically make it, do feel free to call in. We'll have the same kind of facilities we were running today for remote participation. Okay, and thanks to all of you, especially thanks to the people who put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into the survey organizing and even the survey responding. So, once again, we will see you all in a week.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye, thanks.
Bye-bye, all.
Bye.